This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast, Season 7, Episode 6. It's the Rapid Fire Edition. We have 8 shows to get through today, so we're going to be real quick and real efficient and no lollygagging at all. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
We also have Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
It is going well. So we do have a fact check. Keen in our Slack channel let me know, or let us know, that Jonathan had suggested that the Electric State seems to be an original project. Turns out that it's not. It turns out to be a 2018 book by, or illustrated novel by, Simon Stalenhag. And I had seen Tales from the Loop on, I think the Tales of the Loop is on Prime. And he also did a book called The Tales of the Loop. And so that, Tales from the Loop, sorry. And that is a very, he's got a very distinctive style. It's sort of, you know, big boy, Sonic the Hedgehog kind of robot look to it, and dystopian, broken down stuff. It's amazing art if you look at it. I'm sure it was a pick of mine back in the day. So I've got a link here, a video of some of the work that he did. And The Electric State is actually, like I said, a book. And there's a quick little YouTube video showing some of the pages from it. That one actually has a story, which I think is what the Millie Bobby Brown is going to carry that character through the story. So really, I mean, I Tales of the Loop, I loved it. It was like 5 or 6 episodes long. They kind of tied together through a common theme. It seemed like an anthology series at first, but it turned out to be like there was a connecting thread, whereas Electric State is actually has a full story. So cool. That should be cool.
Thanks, Keen.
Yeah. And so because we got so many shows to go through, we have, you know, as Jonathan mentioned last week in the after show, we've got 3 Lower Decks. We've got 3 Agathas, including the season finale and the Penguin. Three episodes of Penguin? 2 episodes?
No, it's two.
Two. Okay. Yeah. So 8 shows to go through. So we're going to stick to our form. Concentrate on Star Trek this week, and we'll do the rapid fire on Penguin and Agatha. So, with that, I'm going to hand over the headlines to Jonathan to tell us some of our Star Trek news.
Yeah, so we're going to catch up on a little bit. We lost a legend not that long ago. We had Jeri Taylor passed away recently. She is someone whose names you've probably seen in a lot of Star Trek credits over the years. She was a writer and a producer on Star Trek The Next Generation, and she was the co-creator of Star Trek Voyager, and she was the showrunner there for a number of seasons. She was a huge, huge part of sort of crafting a lot of the TNG and Voyager stories that we love, and was a huge part of the Star Trek legacy and lore. And unfortunately, she passed away at the age of 86. She was nominated for Emmys. She was very well respected throughout the industry, and obviously a trailblazer as far as a showrunner, as a woman. So she was a really important part of not just sci-fi history, but television history. So, you know, obviously, it's you know, these things happen, and it's, you know, 86 is a nice full life, but sad to know that that Jeri's lost, and obviously leaves quite an amazing legacy behind. She was a real force in the Star Trek universe.
And speaking of amazing legacies, we also lost Terry Garr, who I think was, we talked about the cast of Young Frankenstein on we were talking about Mel Blanc a few months ago.
Oh, Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks.
Terry Garr. Mel Brooks, sorry. Mel Brooks, yeah. And Mel Blanc. We were talking about both of them.
Well, they're both the honorees for my dog, right?
Yes, that was the connection. So, but Terry Garr, if you're, I mean, the classic roll in the hay, plays the German girl, I guess. It's not really Germany where they go, Transylvania, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Which is somewhat over there. Anyway, she plays the assistant to Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein, paid by Gene Wilder. And but the connection to Star Trek is the original series, season 2, episode 26. She was in Assignment Earth playing Roberta Lincoln. And that was actually, I think, I forgot about this, but that was actually supposed to be a spinoff series from Star Trek with Gary Seven, I think his name was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
that's a backdoor pilot, right?
Yeah, and I think that is that the one where they used the footage from the Apollo missions, like they something about the.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, there you're was right. A they were trying to stop or change or allow or whatever protect a mission to the moon, and that's one of the ones where Spock and Kirk and gang travel back in time. I think right to like present doing air quotes present day Earth, so it would be 1969. Or 68, I think.
Yeah, when they time traveled to the Paramount backlot.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's you know your usual, and then reusing the footage from the Apollo to save on paying for stuff, right? Yeah, so that was Terry Garr, hugely missed. So she's the last, I think, surviving cast member from Young Frankenstein, though, right?
So except for Mel, right? Mel's still with us. Mel.
Well, yeah, was he in the movie? Yes, he was.
Yeah, he was. He
played the professor or whatever, right?
Yep. Yeah. And for our younger audience, the things she's probably best known for, I mean, she was a big movie star in the 1970s and 80s. She did Mr. Mom. She was like in all kinds of stuff. But for a more modern audience, she was Phoebe's mom on Friends. And that's a role, Phoebe's real mom, birth mom on Friends. And she had a recurring role in that part. So I think for the Gen Zs and millennials, that's probably how they best know her.
Right. Cool. Yeah. All right, well, let's dig into some. We got three stories here, I guess.
We got some Trek. So, at New York Comic Con, we got some nice information drop. We finally found out when we're going to see the Section 31 film starring Michelle Yeoh. We weren't sure. We were kind of hoping we might see it before the end of the new year, but given that we're going to have Lower Decks pretty much running right up until the holidays, they decided, I guess, in their infinite wisdom, to give us Section 31, the movie, on January 24th. So that's kind of cool. Give us something to look forward to in the new year on the Trek side, because it looks like it's going to be pretty cool. We got a much more sort of robust trailer. We got to see some of the other actors who were in it. I think this is going to be cool. I'm kind of curious to see what they're going to do with Section 31 after all this hype. What'd you guys make of all this stuff?
Well, you know, first thing is like the headline says, you know, Section 31 trailer, New York Comic Con, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see anywhere in this article there's a link to any trailer. I looked several times. I went back and watched the trailer from like 3 months ago.
Oh, you know what? I'm not sure that they showed. I'm not sure that they released the trailer. I think it was shown.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But they did show. They released all the posters. They released all, and then they released there was a little bootleggy stuff going around. If you want to go have a look for it, I think people were surreptitiously recording it.
Cool. Yeah, it looks good. I mean, it's an interesting. I don't know. Sort of story based on what I've seen in the trailers, but you know, and she is kind of a delicious character, the Emperor, right? And of course now Academy Award winning Michelle Yeoh, right? So
I wonder, you know, obviously she loves this character. She'd said like, I want to come back and play this character, but I wonder how much her price tag went up in the interim.
And I think since this is coming out in January, I think this fills the time slot for like, how do you keep subscriptions going month after month?
Defeating the Lopez principle, Lopez calculus, one thing at a time, right?
They do a good job, because maybe that's a lead into your next item.
Yeah, so this is interesting. So we obviously were looking forward to next year. We're hoping to get the first season of Starfleet Academy, the series that is a spinoff of Discovery, just like Strange New Worlds is, that will focus on sort of rebuilding the Starfleet Academy in the far-flung future. They announced that it's already been renewed for season 2 before the first episode is even premiered. So that's great news for Trek fans. It means that they, at the studio level, really like what they're seeing. They think it has a future to grow on. It means that they trust the showrunners and the chemistry of how things are going. So that's a great sign if you're hoping for positives to look ahead to. So yeah, I'm happy. I gotta admit, this trend that has been sort of happening more and more over the past probably 2 years of one and done sci-fi seasons is really starting to tick me off sometimes. You know, you get into a show, you're like, oh, this is great. And they're like, yeah, no, we're going to cancel that. Like, that had no legs to stand on. It's like, well, that's great. So now I'll never know how it ends. And, or why did I invest the time in these characters? So, but we knew they were taking big swings, right? Like they signed Holly Hunter and, you know, like it's, it looks like it's going to be a big, ambitious, like this could be a pretty big, new addition to the franchise. I mean, talking about Starfleet Academy, that's something they've been talking about for like ever, right? They talked about doing that back in the 80s. They were going to do a Starfleet Academy series. So about freaking time, frankly.
Yeah, and Mary Wiseman's back as Lieutenant Tilly, but they've also, Jet Reno's coming back, played by Tig Notaro, and apparently they're billing it as She-Hulk's Tatiana Maslany, which, but I think, wouldn't it be Black...
Orphan Black's. Yeah.
Orphan Black is much
better. They might want to go with that. That might be the one she won the awards for,
They're going for recency, right? And then Robert Picardo coming back as the doctor.
Yeah.
For the emergency. Is he coming back as the emergency hologram? I guess so. Like, yeah, is the emergency hologram age or what?
Yeah, and Odette Fair's coming back as Admiral Vance. So yeah, it's going to be kind of a trip down, you know, if you were in on the stuff for Discovery and that sort of collected universe, there's going to be at least a starting point for you. But it sounds like they're going kind of their own way, which is cool.
Evil Tilly, though.
Yeah, that's right. Oh my God, Evil Tilly was the best. And the last thing we got at New York Comic Con was a clip. We got a clip from Strange New Worlds, a little more of a scene, trying to sort of set the stage. They really are kind of stringing us along and teasing on this. We've all talked about it. I think that and Lower Decks are kind of our 1 and 1A favorite Trek things right now. But, you know, I keep getting these little samples. They showed us the trailer. They showed us the sample. I'm like, great. Show me the show. I love this show. I want to see more of the show.
But most of two of the clips they've shown so far were actually like, weren't like snippets. They were actually like a good 5 minutes or 10 minutes of the show, right?
Yeah, the one they showed at Comic-Con was like a good, three plus minutes. So, you know, fairly.
And this is the Gorn. So the Gorn, is the Gorn the lizard dude from that fought against Kirk?
Yes, but you remember they kind of brought them into the first season of the show. They had basically like been brought back as sort of the big bads, right? They were going to be the mysterious monsters in the dark, and they have the whole thing with
her name, that lady
girl. And they, of course, they earn spoilers, but they, you know, they end up killing the engineer, and yeah, so there's a whole like big bad. They kind of are the sort of the Borg of Strange New Worlds, right?
Yeah, you had it as like Lan Soong, I think is the name. I think you nailed it.
Lan, yeah, that's right. Thanks, Jaime.
But this also leads into the prequel problem, because where was the Gorn during the original series then? If that's the, you know.
Well, maybe these guys are going to take care of them.
If you remember my hypothesis that, you know, we see more of the Gorn life cycle in Strange New Worlds, and they're like extremely vicious as they're smaller. They become a little bit more or less, you know, animalistic and more like a lizard person, but still pretty awesome. And then if you project that out to what we saw Kirk fight, it's probably a geriatric retired Admiral Gorn who's well past his prime.
Yeah.
To gone when the world fell or whatever that expression was.
Yeah, really, really.
So you think this is like what do you call it? In insect life when you have like a younger generation of you know what you call it with like pupa almost
yeah
like,
larval and pupa and, yeah. exactly
yeah they kind of play it like the alien, like, you know, I like the way they played it in Strange New Worlds, like it's a mystery thing you don't really know, and what's her Soong says like, oh my God, you can't believe how vicious these people are, these creatures are, without showing them, right?
Yeah.
And then you see the battle clips that they've been showing in these two, at least in this latest trailer. I think we saw part of this before, but it just sort of seems like it's like mayhem, like organized mayhem, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I enjoyed most from season two was the sort of development of the Lan character who is recovering from the trauma of being held prisoner by the Gorn and losing her family and all that stuff. And sort of her sort of refinding her confidence and stuff. That was like a really, really strong piece of the last season. Yeah, so something else to look forward to. Again, 2025, it's nice to know we've got a couple things down the line, even though we said goodbye to Picard, we said goodbye to Discovery, we're about to say goodbye to Lower Decks at the end of the season, so it's nice to know that the future of Trek looks bright.
So when are we looking at this coming out?
2025 is all they've said.
Oh, so like a whole months from now.
Definitely not in January for what I just described. It's almost certainly in February to keep that that subscription money rolling in. February at the earliest. You heard it here, folks.
You could just tell they're going on. They're like, what time is account at? Okay, we need to calculate this.
All right, well, this is bringing us to the main part of the Rapid Fire show where we will be talking about Star Trek for once and finally, yay, after months and months and months. But this week we're going to be talking about three episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks Season 5, the finale. So first, should we go one show at a time here? What do you think?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So first show is Dos Cerritos, which I think Dos is Spanish for two.
Yeah, it would be Dos Cerritos, I think, at some point they mentioned.
two of the Cerritos. Yeah. Yep. So enter the wormhole or the time warp or whatever you want to call it. And space was Marinus is not another, but not a space anomaly.
Yeah.
Right. So what are your elevator pitches then?
What do you got, Jaime?
Mine was pretty basic about Tendi goes on a quest for a ship while it's just another Wednesday spatial anomaly for the rest of the Cerritos crew.
Yeah. I went with one of my all time favorite quotes from any sci-fi program ever, which is curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal.
Ah, right. I'll go with Tale of Two Cerritos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So this, we got the warp, right? We get this, and it's actually, our Cerritos ends up in their universe, right?
Yeah. There's some discussion of like, you know, which one is the prime universe? So that's an Easter egg there for like consideration of a prime universe. Like you have prime and Kelvin that we've talked about, but who determines prime exactly? Who's the correct one? Is a
I think it depends if Mariner's sleeves are rolled up and she has no interest in career advancement. I would call that prime.
I think it also depends on whether or not Billups is wearing a crown or not, because that was hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. One comment I had about this episode though was just interject was when I started watching and I went, wait a minute, like, because they had the whole Tendi and her crew
pirating
and infiltrating another ship, and I'm like, or infiltrating another guy's horde of cool things, and it felt very similar to the last season's episode, right? Didn't it feel that way to you, like where the guy has all this collection of stuff and I think it's Tendi pretending.
Right.
Yeah, they did the one with the guy who's the you know, treasure ship or whatever, and she's bringing it from one place to the other. Yeah.
Yeah. Or was that a play on another show?
Well, this was a play on the Kiva Svajo character from TNG, right? The collector. As a matter of fact, this guy is from the same species that he has as a guest in that episode, right? So, yeah, I think it's supposed to be like, oh, I'm a rare treasures collector. Because, yeah, my Easter eggs, there was a bunch of Easter eggs in this one.
Yeah, I guess for Easter eggs, the intro has more chaos with, I think, a Tholian web. And I forget who the big green hand is from the original series, I think.
Yep, that's exactly right. And they also added added that visual effect to the Lower Decks thing that they added in the fifth season of TNG. That when the logo comes up and it's got that like wave effect below the words, they added that in on TNG and they added it here too. That made me laugh. I was like, that is some deep cuts, nonsensical stuff to copy.
Yeah, I have to go back and watch the beginning. I think I skipped through those.
Yeah.
They're kind of doing a greatest hits from the first four seasons. They're adding them into the credits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't it Kane who pointed out on our Slack that, they're mimicking the posters?
Yes. Oh, God. Yes. The Star Trek 5 theme of this one is painful.
Potentially painful.
It's the worst Star Trek movie. I'll die on that.
What does God need with a starship?
Oh, my God. All right. I'm going to let that one slide so we can keep this one moving. Yeah, best pew 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 for this one I had was the pirating. I thought that the Tendi and her crew was kind of fun to watch. It's fun to watch Tendi be a badass because she's such a sweetheart, right? And so it's fun to see her, you know, her and her her warriors fighting. Easter eggs. Okay, so I got a few. So in the room when they first do the treasure room, when they board the first ship, there's a whole bunch of stuff there. The one that really caught my eye was there was a gold bust of the original Grand Negus. That made me laugh because it was very like detailed with the gigantic ears. Like, yes, the gigantic ears, one must rule us. Then we cut to the Cerritos and Mariner's playing Kalto, the Vulcan Logic game. And then when Bormler bursts into the room, she screws it up. And then Talin comes over and fixes it for her. That was funny. There's a reference to Naomi Wildman, which, of course, is a Voyager reference. The Kzinti at one point when they're the two sort of aliens who look kind of they're orange and sort of look a little bit like a lynx or a lion. The Kzinti, they're from the animated series, characters in the animated series. And so are the blue Orions. I looked that one up because I'm like, what is that a reference to? And I looked it up and it was like, oh, yeah, the blue Orions. It's because there was apparently a color error in the original animated series where they were supposed to be green, just like the show, but the animator, the cells got mixed up and they ended up coming out blue. So they turned it into a joke like, oh, they're the blue Orions. That made me laugh. And then Starbase 80, they keep bringing up Starbase 80 as like the worst place in the galaxy. That running gag is very funny. And my favorite moment of the whole episode was Boimler, the alternate Boimler doing the Riker maneuver to get out of his chair at the end of the episode was awesome. I laughed so hard because he had the beard and everything and then he does the Riker maneuver. I'm like, God, this guy's awesome. Did you guys spot any other stuff?
Well, there was also, what's that doll that Picard is given on the sex planet?
Oh, the Horgon. Yeah. Yes, yeah, there is a Horgon in that collection. You're right.
Yeah, in the collection. Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, this show is like the best of Trek Easter eggs because they're such nerds for it. And they did not disappoint in the first episode back. They were just jam packed. And I'm sure I missed a bunch, but those, like the fact that they're going so deep cuts on like the animated series and stuff is, I just love it. I love it.
Yeah, I'm also seeing I just see a still shot of the green hand grabbing the Borg cube. There's also the ship that comes back to get the whales.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The quotes wise, because I think I had the same Easter egg, I had the same pew pew pew. Quote wise was when the two crews meet each other and you have both versions of Shaq's arm wrestling. And one says, "You've got great form. I learned it from strangling Cardassians. I did too." It's like such joy in their voices.
Yeah. Yeah. There was, again, this show just absolutely hits home run after home run on the quotes. I really liked stupid rogue archaeologists with no ethical codes. Again, a running theme throughout Star Trek of like, they encounter this rogue archaeologist. Yeah. Yeah, there were some really good ones. And the one that summed it up perfectly was Mariner. "Are you replacing me? Do you know how hacky that is?" Obviously being in on the joke of, you know, oh, we're from an alternate universe. I've replaced you. So good. And my big question for this one was, and we'll get into it as soon as we get to episode 2 and 3, but was, is Boim's now going to grow? Is our Boim's going to now grow a beard because he loved the purple beard on alternate Boimler? So stay tuned and we'll get to that one.
Yeah. As of this episode, I wrote, is there a big bad for this season? Normally I see something like, oh, okay, that's probably going to be the story arc. And it wasn't until the third episode I'm like, oh, okay, I think I have an idea.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. My tackle number two.
Tackle number two, Shades of Green, speaking of the blue Orions.
Yep. I'll do the elevator pitch for mine is, it's not easy being green.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good one. I went very plain with the two plots of Tendi goes to war while the Cerritos ends capitalism.
Yeah, the for the best pew pew pew, I wrote down a gentle, supportive mutiny, a cutiny.
Yeah, that one is one of mine as well.
Oh my God, it's so stupid, but it's so funny.
Are we going to add pointers to our
pointers? That's right.
Yeah, our new section.
These are like Loeffler's laws, but different.
Yeah.
The two plots kind of worked well. Like sometimes they do, they kind of sort of a splitting A plot, B plot, sometimes C plot, and you're like, some's better than the others, but these kind of balanced out each other pretty well. The because I guess the C plot was the Rutherford Tillyn one in this one, right? Where they were Tillyn was trying to get Rutherford out of his doldrums for missing Tendi, right? But the end of capitalism storyline and the Boehm's was hilarious. Just so anytime Boehm's is in charge, things are going to be funny.
It may not be perfect, but I did have the, as a vague Easter egg, because I didn't have anything else good that I noticed, was that post-capitalism is definitely true for the Federation. We see that in a bunch of other series, but outside of the Federation, it's still very much alive. We saw that a lot in Deep Space Nine, where it was very heavily clear that you're not on, I mean, you're technically on a Bajoran space station, so Federation people do have to deal more with capitalism type things than they would on the Federation only Voyager or Enterprise or etc.
Yeah, a lot of talk about gold-pressed platinum in that series. I had a couple of good ones. So at one point, Boehm's is wearing a shirt that says "No Money, No Problems," which is a play on, of course, Biggie. It's "Mo Money, More Problems." I thought that was hilarious. Not necessarily a Trek Easter egg, but a good Easter egg. At one point, they're talking about Pyrethian bat milk. Phlox had a Pyrethian bat in his laboratory, in his medical quarters in Enterprise. He had a Pyrethian bat. So again, weird kind of deep cut. When Tendi tries to give D'Erica a pair of fluffy socks, they look like the Alpha 117 dog from the little dog with the horn on its head from the original series. Do you remember that one, Tim?
Yeah.
That was, again, a nice deep cut. I'm like, of course you would make socks that look like that. Of course you would. And Gucci was there. Did you guys see Gucci?
Which is Gucci?
When Badgie, remember Badgie and Gucci? There was like the good version of Badgie. When Tillyn is taking apart the shuttle at the end of the episode and she's like ripped it to shreds and it is staying there, Gucci's behind her helping her rip it apart.
Oh, right.
Oh, I did. That's right. I did see him there. That's right.
Yeah. I'm like, anytime they get a Badgie or a Gucci in there, I am 100% in because he's one of the best parts. What'd you have for quotes?
I had one from Tendi. I don't have an exact one, but, you know, she realizes that her sister is pregnant. And she's during the race, the space race. She's telling her sister to watch out for gravitons, chronotons. Nebulas are filled with dangerous tons.
Tons, that's right.
Yeah, tons.
I like that one, and I really like the one, the robot guards, where the robot guard goes down to the dungeon and says, "I forgot to water them. I failed as a guard and a gardener."
Yeah.
Oh, so stupid. It's so good. My big question was, nice little stash, Boehm's. Is it going to keep going?
Yep. And then her sister says, it's pronounced Orion.
Yeah. Orion. Yep. That's good. I mean, I think we talked about this in past seasons. You know, Boimler got promoted, Mariner leaves. We had all these, like, you know, suspension from the group kind of moments. I think two episodes away from the gang and having their own little adventures is about enough. So I think this worked out pretty much as we expected. Tendi back with the gang before long. Although I like the Tillyn character. She's kind of a fun fifth beetle to this foursome.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they play her out, because she's even supporting the return of Tendi, obviously, this particular, at the end of the episode, right?
Yeah. She's, you know, she's kind of part of the gang now.
Yeah. Oh, you destroyed the shuttle, as Rutherford says.
Hooray, we can all put it back together.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, for me, I still didn't really have a real big question, but I formulated here that, like, is growing up the big bad this season? I started to suspect something like that in this episode.
But then we get to episode 3. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, that would be the best exotic nanite hotel.
Yeah. A strange choice to name something after that particular series of movies, but all right. Have either of you seen those movies?
I haven't. No, have you?
No.
Okay.
I'm in.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Not sure that I have either. No.
Yeah, best exotic okay. Marigold hotel. Yeah.
No.
Moving on. I guess that's all we can do.
Any elevator pitches?
I never can say goodbye.
Hmm.
And resorts offer plenty of options. You can break up with your ex, go on an undercover mission, chase a Glumpus.
I had, due to the overt references in this episode, I love the smell of nanites in the morning.
Yeah, there we go.
Mm.
There we go.
My favorite pew 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 in this episode was Boimler skiing.
That was okay,
like yeah. A freaking Wile E. Coyote cartoon. Come on, Brian, follow her down.
I had a slightly different one. It was the vibing the Glumpus.
Oh, yeah.
That special instrument. It like visually looked cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the dude who kept getting his hands taken out.
Oh, Jet. Poor Jet. Oh, my God.
I just got my hands back.
This was another one that was like jam-packed with Easter eggs. The reference to the Dixon Hill slot machines. Of course, that was Picard's favorite character to be on the holodeck. The bar they go to is the Risa bar. They mm-hmm. reference a bunch of different episodes. They reference the Gormagander. They reference the Galaxy's Childs. They reference the Gallimites. So these are all like different cuts from different series. As Gallimites is DS9, and then the Gormagander and the Galaxy's Child. Yeah. And then yeah, like this episode, Boimler trying to chase down Admiral Milius and playing Admiral Milius like he's Marlon Brando's character in Apocalypse Now, that he's in the jungle, you know, they have to track him down, but in this case it's like at an all-inclusive resort where he's a Latinum Club member. Like again, just what an absurd thing to reference, but yeah, that the whole him as the Marlon Brando character made me laugh very hard. What'd you have for quotes?
Well, she talks about the isohedron thing, the 20-sided die.
Oh, I can't believe we're going to be killed by a damned icosahedron. Icos.
Yeah, I had that one. With the counting, she's like 7, 8, 9, icosahedron.
Again, it's a 20-sided die from D&D.
Exactly.
Yeah. The one I liked was... Boimler, okay, look, before you hurt me, just know that I'm too frail to torture. Too much pain, and I'll just die.
And they lean into that. Like, we brought you on because you need a skinny, wiry guy to go through ducts. It's like 90% going, sneaking through air ducts to do that stuff.
The, yeah, you're wiry, and then he greases himself up so that he can beat them up. Yeah. It's so dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they, The question I had for this one was, Ransom says when Boimler puts the lotion on the first time at the Risa bar, he says, you don't have to worry about that. This thing can actually sense your skin and
the sun.
And it adjusts it so you don't burn. But then we meet Milius and he's clearly got a sunburn.
He's got orange.
Well, he's got the I was wearing sunglasses burn, right?
Yeah.
But why does he have that with... You can't burn.
Maybe he's using like a tanning bed or something in addition to like the normal, because they say it was an artificial sun, not necessarily there weren't other tanning solutions.
Yeah, true. Also, by the way, for future episodes, I'd like to be known as Gilbert Manhandle. That's going to be my alias.
No, you're just Billups. Yeah.
Or Zandy Billups. Either one. The B plot with Mariner and the I don't know if it was the A plot or the B plot, but with Mariner and Jennifer and the sort of breakup not breakup, it was okay. It didn't knock my socks off. It was funny, but it wasn't like the best part.
Mm-hmm.
So Jaime, now your big question. You I think maybe you and I are going down the same road here as far as what the big bad this season might be.
Yeah, especially because Boimler continues, like they did carry along his beard is coming in patchy, yep. But it's coming yep. in, and Ransom was trying to offer the ability for his officer, his junior officer, to expand and do more things. It really felt like growing up is the big bad, where Mariner doesn't want, our Mariner doesn't want to, the alternate universe Mariner did and said, oh man, this sucks, I want to go back to not having responsibility. And this, in the meta look at this, this is a show called Lower Decks. There are definitely fans out there like, hey, why is this coming to an end? We want more. It's like, but it has to end at some point. We could argue about whether it's here or season 7, hypothetically, right? But surely at some point they have to, as I've joked, become upper deckers.
Yeah.
Right? They can't stay lower deckers forever. At least not these folks. You might have Lower Decks, the next generation for the next kiddos or something. But these ones need to eventually evolve and become grown up senior officers.
Yeah. And theoretically go their separate ways, because even Jennifer says that in this episode is like, you know, I got an opportunity, I had to take it. And that's come up multiple times over the course of the past 4 seasons.
And as an American, let me just interject, as an American, I don't think it was a coincidence that she's going to the USS Manitoba, because it definitely seems like your American girlfriend is going to Canada for college or something.
The other thing that I think was interesting, so it turns out that the Globus was a tiny Federation ship from an alternate dimension. So this is like, now they mentioned in the first episode that there was like these dimensional portals keep opening up more and more, and that's how they end up with the alternate Cerritos. Here we get an alternate universe little mini ship. I wonder if there's going to be some sort of giant overlapping multi-universe kind of thing somewhere in here too, because I found it interesting that they both made an overt reference to it, saying, hey, that's like the second one this week as far as these portals or whatever, and then here we had another one. I wonder if it's gonna be a
Voyager class ship or whatever.
Yeah, Intrepid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Intrepid class. Yeah, but yeah, I wonder if there's going to be a whole like crossover with other alternate universe versions of things. It's something as part of the big shebang send off for this thing.
Yeah, because we had an alternate time slippy thing in the first episode, but not the second, right?
No, I don't think we had anything there.
Yeah. Rounding things out for my Easter eggs before we move on is the Star Trek VI style. Your genitals can be other locations, like your back or your knees, which is where they were at Star Trek VI.
You're grabbing my genitals.
And the,
why are they on your back?
Where else would they be?
And the one species that Boimler accidentally offends by eating and drinking in front of, I think that's a Star Trek Enterprise episode where
it absolutely is.
And I couldn't, it was like Kretarans, I couldn't get the name, but it was like, I think they consider eating more intimate than mating.
Yep. I wrote it down. Cretacans?
Yeah, it was Cretacans. Something like that. Yeah,
they're closer. The ones who were like easily offended. Yeah. And because there was the other ones that the Gallimites were the ones that they were going to send him over to. And we met Gallimites in DS9. They're the ones that had like the transparent heads, right? With the brain, you can see their brains. So yeah, there was like a double dip on Star Trek nerddom in that one little sequence. Let me go talk to that nice family over there.
Which we knew right away was going to be a problem.
For Boims, always.
Now, a word from our sponsor.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
Now, back to the show.
All right. Want to jump over to Le Pinguino?
Sure, let's do Le Pinguin. Where are we, Pinguin? The Homecoming, season 1, episode 5. Mm-hmm. And the Gold Summit. The Homecoming was, that was the, what's her name now?
Sophia?
Sophia. Was this a Sophia episode or?
No, Sophia episode was episode 4. That was the one.
This is the one where Vic takes the mom to the new location, right?
Yeah, this is the one where they're basically rebuilding after Sophia finds out, and they're trying to get the shroom stuff back in action and get Cobb's mom to a safe location. And
there's the hostage first. They kidnap the kids and hold them hostage to get the shrooms back.
Yep.
Right. Which is why my elevator pitch was, you know, Oz makes a big move on the Maronis while Sophia makes a big move on the Falcones.
Mm. Yeah, I had when your best laid plans fail, you can always go home again. Oz ends up back in his old stomping grounds, and so does Vic.
It's true, in Crown Point. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yep. Is that where Oz is from too?
Yeah. His mom says, like, why'd you have to bring me here back where it all started?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And even I think in the first episode, when he hasn't quite decided if he's going to kill Vic, they talk about, hey, where are you from? Okay. Oh, Crown Point. Yeah. I was definitely from that area. You know, yep. He starts describing how difficult it was growing up in that environment.
Yeah. Didn't, pew, pew, pew. I just wrote family barbecue.
I had Shroom or Sun Go Boom, very similar.
Yeah, that scene was pretty harrowing. I mean, geez, watching Sal Maroney's wife and son go up in flames, and then, you know, the action to try and get the mushrooms out of there and everything. Yeah, that was pretty intense. Show's not dark. It gets pretty crazy.
Well, that's an important actress too. The woman that played. The wife, she's been in a lot of sci-fi stuff lately.
She was in the Punisher series as well on Netflix.
Yeah, she was the main character in, or one of the main characters in The Expanse as well.
Mm, yeah, she's got that like really really deep voice. Yeah, and I like the fact that like it's not just like the Italian mob of the Italian mob of the Italian mob. Like clearly Vic was married into this Persian family, and it's nice that they're not just like. Wearing down these same old tropes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have much in the Easter egg hunt. It was just felt a little bit straight. There may have been stuff in there, but I really didn't see anything.
Yeah, I for some reason wrote blood money, but a week or two later, I can't recall what I was intending with this terse note.
Hmm.
But otherwise, I didn't have anything Easter egg wise.
Yeah. The only Easter eggs I had was like, God, whoever programmed the music for this must have been in my like, iTunes playlist. Cause the first song that they play regularly in the show is St. Vincent. They played Reckless, which is a great tune on the new St. Vincent album. And then at the end of the episode, when they're going down into the sewers and into the train station, they're playing A Forest by The Cure, which is like one of my all time jams. So I was like, this is amazing. I don't know who's doing this, but it's like they're reading my playlists.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Best quotes, which would you have, Jaime?
I had, that's funny, do me a favor, call your wife, see if she answers.
Oh,
really cold way of putting it.
I like when Sophia goes to see Sal. What a funky hideout. Big fan of wood, I see. Sophia, man, this she's, I really hope she gets nominated for an award, because Kristen Milioti has been just an amazing performance in this series. But when she does the line where she's talking about when she kills her whole family, she says, I killed them all and I'm so glad they're dead. My family disposed of my mother like she was nothing. Then they did the same to me. Like, she's just, oh man. I mean, it's good writing, but her delivery is fantastic.
Yeah. And that one character that you said keeps surviving, she, you know, dealt with him.
Yep. Yep.
What's his name?
Johnny
Vitti.
Johnny. Yeah. Yep, Johnny's finally. That was a pretty cool moment, because he's like, "Well, I survived being chained up and frozen. I'm part of the new team." And she just puts one through his forehead. My big question is one that we've talked about on a number of different shows. It's becoming a problem in Star Wars, and here it is rearing its ugly head in the Penguin. Do you remember back when getting stabbed in the gut was a fatal injury? Like they just treat it so cavalierly. Like, oh, it's like Sal gets. Knifed in the end of the last episode, and then here he's like, oh, I'm gonna go make some stuff in the kitchen. Like, what are you kidding me? You got stabbed in the gut. And I'd just like to say an RIP to the purple Maserati, which was just an absolute banger of a ride. We'll miss you, purple Maserati. Any other cues?
Yeah, I mean, that whole sorry, go ahead.
Big questions.
Only three more episodes left. Where are we going to go with this?
I mean, somebody's gonna die, and I don't think it's the Penguin.
Or Sophia.
Well, who knows? Sometimes great characters are made to die.
Yeah, maybe.
See our review of Agatha in about 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, so Penguin episode 6, Gold Summit.
Mm-hmm.
My elevator pitch was, sorry, Oz, it's never just business.
Yeah, I had... two different takes. I had how far are you willing to go? Which lines will you cross? Mm. And the first taste is free.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. Isn't that simple drug economics right there?
Yeah, exactly.
The I went with a different kind of take on the pew, pew, pew. I really like the scene with Sophia and Eve, the penguin's girlfriend, where Eve thinks she's going to get killed and is basically like setting herself up for it. And then they just sort of kind of talk it out. Just the tension of that scene was really like edgy. Wasn't really sort of traditional pew, 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 but like the energy of it was pretty crackling. Those two put on a really good show.
Yeah. And I mean, I kind of like the respect of Sophia kind of respecting the fact that she's just trying to protect the girls, her own girls, right?
Yep.
So, and you know, and revealing to Eve that she wasn't in fact the hangman, right?
Yeah.
Right. Right. It was like a, you know, mutual respect where, she went out of her way to draw Sophia to her, right?
Yep.
Like I'm throwing myself to try to exchange my life for the girl's life. And it's like, all right, well, you did that. I'm going to exchange you this knowledge about my father. I'm not the hangman, but you live. So you gave me what I needed, the information I needed to get at Oz.
Yep. Did you have a different pew, 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 Jaime?
A more literal one where Victor caps the bully. I forget the bully's name. Squid, something like that.
Squid, yeah. Yeah, that was a tough watch. I mean, you know, we've seen Vic sort of turn towards the darkness, choosing to stay with Oz instead of going with his girlfriend. But, you know, knowing that he has to take care of Squid, he tries to buy him off. He won't take the buy off. And he's basically like, I'm going to go and tell the other gangs where you guys are. And he knows what he's got to do. But watching him do it and react to it was pretty intense. It was pretty intense.
Yeah, he tries so hard, and you see the purity in Vic's character, and I like the connection with Oz, where Oz sees him, and he comforts him, is like, you know, it gets easier, you know? You're part of this this lifestyle now. It's really hard now, but you'll be doing this enough that it does get easier. He never says it gets easy, he just says it gets easier.
Well, and it's a tricky one, too, because, you know, like, I think we're supposed to, as viewers, sort of wonder, like, is this really who Vic is? Is he really going to go down this path? Or is he going to sort of still be able to find, you know, a path towards the light? And, you know, killing his first person is a pretty large bridge to cross, right?
I was trying to figure out where I saw Squid from. It's Jared Abramson, but he's from that show Travelers, which I was telling you guys about before.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I never watched that, but I do remember you mentioning that. So he's from that show, huh?
I finally figured out. It took me like 6 episodes. I finally figured out where I knew Vic from. He was on Runaways. He was the guy. He was one of the main characters on Runaways.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, like 3 years ago, so he was younger. But yeah. I knew his face. My God, he looks so familiar, but I can't place it. And yeah, it was not till this week where I was like, oh my God, it's that kid.
Well, I just looked at a picture of he had the glasses and the big fro.
Yeah.
I just saw a picture of Colin Farrell. I'm like, who's he playing this show?
A credit to the work that's been done by both his acting and the makeup artist that you have to think about it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to know which is more worthy of an award nomination because they're both exceptional.
Yeah, well, like you said, I think that they'll definitely won't. I can't see this show being passed over for Emmys.
I really hope it isn't. I mean, this is high quality TV. This is, you know, I won't say it's The Sopranos, but I mean, there are some really hard hitting moments and some terrific performances.
Well, even the performance by the mom, Deirdre O'Connell, like she's just phenomenal because you really get the dementia and a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah, really well said, Tim. I think I couldn't agree more. I thought she was a bit of a revelation in this episode. She'd been playing it well, but that the scene where she sort of breaks down and talks to Oz, like that was really, really impressive stuff.
Yeah, especially because it's one of those like, which is more horrifying, losing your mind and not knowing or knowing that you're losing it.
Yeah.
And what do you do? Pretty well played, I think, in this one.
Yeah. The only Easter egg I pulled out of this one was they referenced Polly's Diner. And Polly's Diner is, it's from the Arkham video games. There's like a whole part of the video games. I don't know if you guys have ever played those, but I love those games. Those are some of my very favorite video games I've ever played. And, yeah, Polly's Diner. I was just like, that's a great, great Easter egg. So, yeah, I like that one.
For mine, I had that Roxy's lampshade looks a lot like an umbrella, which leads to the you know, the more know, 1960s Batman version of the Penguin.
Yeah, great call. Quotes. I love the one from Oz where it's at the beginning of the episode and he says, Oz says to Vic, you know how meaningful that is, Vic, to be the guy in the neighborhood who takes care of people? They're going to tell stories about us one day, kid. The way that he's sort of patterning his life after the, you know, the monologue that he has in the first episode talking to Alberto about, you know, this legendary crime boss, and they had a parade for him in the streets when he died, and Oz trying to carve that out for himself to be somebody who's important, to be somebody who matters, not just to the crime, but to the community, is that's it really does a great job of speaking to what motivates him. It's not just money. So the episode ends on a pretty terrifying moment as we see Vic and Oz's mom, and we see the hangman coming in the door. And obviously we had talked about this a couple episodes back, you know, is it a matter of time before Sophia finds out about the mom? Right.
Right.
I have it. We have two episodes left. I have a tough time thinking that Vic goes in this one. I'm feeling like the mom might not make it through the next one. But I don't know if it's would be satisfying if Vic went here.
No, and the mom's got to mean a whole lot to Penguin, right? So
yeah,
because he's very protective of her, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, my thought is that Sophia's probably gonna end up killing the mom. Vic's gonna get away, and then Vic tells Oz. Then it's the showdown in the final episode, Oz versus Sophia, or you know. You killed my family. You killed my brother. You killed my mom. Let's do this to the death, which would be great TV.
Right. Right. That was my big question. Like, how does Sophia handle this now that she has two hostages that mean something to Oz?
Yeah. Yeah. Still continues to be amazing TV.
A couple of good quotes just to close this out for my things that I wrote down, both from Oz. At the Gold Summit, he's like, you know, they run crap. We eat crap.
Yeah.
And the other one of like, they're so busy with their noses up, they'll never think of looking down for the underground, was it like the underground metro trains or something like that, that they're hanging out in?
Yeah, they're basically they're like the old, what do you say? It's like trolley system or something, right?
Trolley. Right, right.
Yeah.
And there's also the doctor dude who's from, I don't know if you guys watched Sons of Anarchy.
No.
Yeah, young Mexican dude or Hispanic dude. He plays sort of a double agent in Sons of Anarchy. Yeah.
Spoilers.
Well, it's like been over for 4 years, right?
Yeah. He was on Power Man, right? That actor, he was on both seasons of Power Man. What were they called? Luke Cage. Sorry.
A Power Man. Yeah. Okay.
Power Man is Luke Cage to me.
I got it.
Yeah, I never did watch Luke Cage, except for I only saw him in
The Defenders.
A girl with a name.
Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones.
I really like Mike Coulter as an actor, and I really actually liked his performance. There was some, like, him and Alfre Woodard, and there was some, like, I mean, Mahershala Ali was in that. That was a really good show. It's worth going back and having a watch.
Okay, so we got Agatha all along. We got three episodes to close out the season. So first up is Death Hand in Mine. I don't remember what that one's about.
My elevator pitch is
focused episode. Yeah,
it's the fortune teller's test.
What's her name? Lilia.
Lilia. Yeah. Sorry, Jaime. I missed your elevator pitch there.
Oh yeah, the fortune teller's test.
Yes. I had. If you mess with the sword long enough, you'll eventually get the point. Yeah. This we had talked about it as we were discussing the earlier episodes, that Lilia kept having these disassociative moments where she was clearly talking to someone else or seeing something else or having visions, or something was up with Lilia, but we really didn't know what was going on there. And the way this episode sort of played back through those episodes of what she was seeing and how it all tied together, I thought was really expertly done, like really came together nicely. I didn't see all the twists and turns in that of who she was talking to, and as she was sort of jumping through her different parts of her life, I thought that they handled that really well and made all those previous statements make sense. And then she also sort of foreshadows something that will happen in a later episode for Agatha as well, right? So that's kind of neat. The best pew 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 I thought was the tower when at the end when the tower is reversing, and just that twist of she grabs the card and flips it over and says tower reversed, and you see all the seven start falling, and that was
right, yeah.
Again, really well filmed, and just that moment of knowing what to do and knowing what the price was going to be was really such a strong moment for a character who, you know, we didn't have a ton of time with her, all things being equal, seven episodes, you know, or six, I guess. She didn't really come along until episode two. You know, she turned into a real something. Like, I mean, Patti LuPone is an amazing performer, and she made you care about that character and really made you invest in who she was. I mean, I got to be honest, when the first two characters died, Mrs. Davis and Alice, I was like, but when this came around and it was her time to go, I was a little bit, you know, like, oh, I liked her.
Yeah. It was a bit disappointing for sure.
Yeah. Any other pew pew pews for you guys?
I had the same one, but I went with, you know, it's striking enough and so cool and unique. I'm like, it's very non-traditional as a pew 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 of like, given that we do swords and fantasy stuff, do we need a shing, shing, shing metal sound for non-traditional pew, pew, pew?
Oh, can we have to put that into the Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones?
Yeah. They've tended to have pew, pew, pews of like flinging fireballs or dragons breathing. I'm like, okay, that's more like pew, pew, pew. But this is a very different pew, pew, pew.
Yeah. Remind me a lot of video games too, like where the solution is to turn the table upside down kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, it's like a logic puzzle or something, right?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not really super familiar with tarot. I think on the last episode that we did, I had looked up a few things just to try and understand a little bit more. But it was interesting to see how, you know, they get it wrong when you first see Billy and Agatha doing it, and he can't do it right. And then you see Lilia come in, and she understands how tarot works and what the cards can mean. And I thought that was really interesting. Again, that wasn't something I was familiar with, but it was funny and interesting. So
according to IMDb, which is uncommon, they say for TV shows and movies, the meaning of each card is actually the real meaning of the card as described by, or how they were actually written.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, this show seems like it's been a pretty good love letter to sort of the legacy of witches in pop culture and history. And so I think if they had flubbed that, it would have been a bit of a glaring thing, right? Would you have for your Easter eggs?
Well, apparently I didn't know this, but the second sword to fall is a Latian sword from Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I did not notice that. But it makes sense because, you know, there's Maleficent, the Wicked Witch of the West.
Mm-hmm.
Glinda, yeah, right. I'm going to call a Get Out movie style of falling down in inky blackness.
Yeah.
Seemed very reminiscent of that. Also, the song used at the very end in the credits is the same song used by Quicksilver in one of the X-Men First Class movies. When he's, you know, they're facing off with the guards, then he runs around the kitchen, stopping the cops.
Yeah.
When he's rescuing all the people?
No, this is the movie right before that one. This isn't the mansion blowing up, rescuing people. This is saving Charles Xavier, Magneto, and Wolverine from getting shot up by the cops.
Yep.
Or the guards or something. I think they're breaking out Magneto. I forget exactly what the context was.
Well, the song in the credits is Time in a Bottle by Jim Croce.
Thank you. That's right. It is Time in a Bottle. I couldn't remember the title.
Yep. Yeah, which was a big deal in the 70s.
Yep. The late great.
Lots of slow dances to that song.
Quotes. I think, there was a lot of little sort of short, pithy ones. Billy saying, "She's not my mom. I have a mom." Talking about Wanda. And that one is a good quote because it comes back in subsequent episodes, that same sort of line. I like Agatha's, "You want straight answers? Ask a straight lady."
Straight lady. Yeah.
I had that one as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was falling. I will fall from Lilia, like understanding how her visions were working. Like, I had a dream I was falling, and understanding that I will, because I saw it, I will fall. I thought that was a really good foreshadowing line. And Yeah, when she calls you a coward, hit the deck from Lilia. That was sort of her parting note to Agatha, which again, we'll talk about in a couple episodes. And then the great line delivery from her, where she says, "I loved being a witch." Just I thought that was such a beautiful sentiment to end this sort of, you know, she'd lived for hundreds of years. She had this complicated life, but that she was like, "I wouldn't change a thing," you know? Like, I think we should all die with that as opposed to regrets, yeah. Right? Any other quotes, Jaime?
No other quotes. No, that was the one that stuck out to me.
Big question.
Agatha definitely has a lot that could be selected. It's hard to keep up with her.
Well, Lilia says the flow of time is an illusion.
Yeah, that sounded very DS9 to me. But you exist here. Would you have your big question?
As of this episode, it is, what's up with Rio being the embodiment of death and something that can combat Agatha physically? Must be something behind it.
Yeah.
Again, as of watching episode 7.
Yeah. Yeah, we had talked in earlier episodes, there were hints that she was Blackheart, or she was, you know, Mephisto, or, you know, all these sort of different comic interpretations of, you know, something nefarious to do with death. But I had seen some speculation online. People were suspecting that she was simply death herself. I thought maybe she was going to turn out to be Blackheart, because death is a tough character to play, and it's a tough character to explain, especially when they were sort of intimating that Agatha and her had this, like, possibly romance, possibly complex relationship. I wasn't sure if death itself made sense, though having watched the final two episodes, it does tie together nicely. I just, in the moment, I wasn't 100% sure. My question as of this 7th episode was, now we've already lost sort of subsequent characters and subsequent episodes. We've got 3 characters left. Does that mean that Jen is going to live or Jen is going to die? Because they were kind of killing off character. I was like, well, how likely is it that Jen makes it out of this? So then we jump to episode 8. Follow me, my friend, to glory at the end.
Yeah, interesting episode.
Yeah, yeah. I had my elevator pitch was, it's the end of the road, or is it?
Mine is going to pair up, and you'll see why, with episode 9, the series finale. Mine is, it was Billy all along.
That's what I had. That's the exact pitch I had for episode 9.
Yeah. I think you sort of have to go with something like buried in the backyard sort of deal. Yeah. She actually is buried in her own backyard, I believe, right?
She is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this one was, yeah, I mean, kind of interesting in that we get sort of the culmination of the what we understand to be the Witch's Road, and, you know, we get the last trial. We get Jen realizing that Agatha actually had, it was Agatha all along who had been the one who had bound her from her powers, and that she, from that, has now regained her powers, and she,
so you have nothing.
She goes free, which was kind of cool. And then we also get sort of the very intense scene where Agatha tries to help Billy find Tommy. And, you know, we get, again, I'll just jump ahead to the quote, but where she says, "Agatha, am I killing this boy so my brother can live?" Like, that was pretty an intense thought, right? Like, am I doing this, or is this happening? And so therefore, Tommy can live.
Yeah, really, and tough then, one to understand. Like, is this being an opportunist for an empty vessel?
Yeah.
Or did you cause the empty vessel to happen?
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, the episode culminates with, you know, Agatha versus Death, or Rio slash Death, and then Billy as Wiccan appearing, and then sort of having that moment of, you know, what's going to happen? Who's, you know, how does this play out? Is, you know, like, how could you beat Death, right? And it turns out you can't. So that was my pew pew pew, was that sort of final battle between Agatha and Death, and just her understanding that it was time for her to embrace death as opposed to trying to avoid death.
Right. But she kept killing people. That was her whole reason for having covens, right?
Yeah.
Or is that more?
That's in the last episode. We kind of learn more about that, right?
Yeah. A non-traditional pew, pew, pew was when Death cuts through reality as a practical effect, just cutting a big sort of tarp in the back. Yeah, the background.
Oh, I love that part. Yeah, that was great.
Do you know what that reminded me of? Was do you remember the movie Dogma, Tim, where the demons use the hockey sticks and they slash through and sort of jump from place to place by doing that? The roller hockey playing demons, they use their hockey sticks to like basically slash a hole in reality and then jump through and then the portals close back up again.
I was a little disappointed with the special effects that they didn't close up the rip after she steps through, right?
Yeah. Although, again, knowing what you find out in the final episode about just, or, you know, how, like, what this really was, what the road really was, the fact that she could easily go from place to place makes perfect sense, because death is everywhere.
Yeah. Well, this is the episode where they had the big metal room, right, too. I thought that was really cool, interesting, on the last trial, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With the time counting down.
Mm-hmm.
Very sort of futuristic.
Yeah, and again, like, how do you make something grow in a space like that? And then her finding that one little dandelion seed in with the locket of Nikki's hair, and using the tear that she has to plant it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And then good. Jen climbing out of the ground, right?
Well, she does that at the beginning of episode 9, right? Because here we just see her; she just vanishes, and so does Billy. And then Agatha finally sort of finds her way out, and then that turns into the big fight scene. The quote that I like the best was, I mean, Catherine Hahn is just a treasure, but when she's talking to Jen and she says, "Your name is a vegetable, the worst kind. It's like swallowing a doily." I mean, who among us has not thought that about kale? And then, yeah, that sort of scene where we go back to Billy's room and then he's looking around and looking at the posters and looking at the toys and looking at all the stuff and sort of realizing, like, hey, wait a minute,
did this really happen? Yeah.
How coincidental is all this? And, you know, again, I think we all had that sort of...
It's kind of like Kevin's room in Time Bandits, right?
Exactly right. Yeah, exactly yeah. right. Yep. Yep. Like, did I do this? Is this real? Did I dream this? Like, how did this happen?
Yeah. And it's all... that's an Easter egg hunt itself, his room, right?
Yep. And then, you know, the episode ends with Boo and a very startled Billy, which jumps us straight over. Did you have any good questions for knowing that we were sort of jumping from one right into the next episode?
Well, my first question was, where are we going to go from here? Like, you know, even past episode 9, right?
Well.
Although it's kind of revealed.
Yeah.
Yeah. The couple of things that I had. Oh, I should remember my quote. So in Westview, the people have gone through Wanda's thing, yeah, and they're like, oh, is it happening again? Like, it's just like a normal weekday thing for witches stuff to occur.
I thought they were a little blasé about it. You'd think these people would have like severe PTSD. The fact that they still live in this community is one thing, but I thought they would be like outside. You just want to see one of them like throw up or crap themselves or something, like, you know, yeah. Wouldn't you be traumatized after all that you went through before? And wouldn't somebody be like, hey, where's Mrs. Davis?
Yeah. I did have one big question about, like, through all this, you know, were Billy and Tommy real? Were they brought to reality by Wanda herself, manifested? There's kind of weirdness around it. I think this points towards they are in some way, shape, or form, given that they have ability to move elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, they establish essentially that they, through the magic that Wanda created, that they have a soul. But then at the end of WandaVision, they don't have a body anymore. They just have, they're basically rogue souls. They exist. And that's why they can sort of jump into other people's empty bodies. Because they're essentially just souls. There is a long and, oh my lord, convoluted explanation from the comic books that if we want to talk about it here, we can, or we can talk about it another time. But there is a long and convoluted explanation as to exactly what Billy and Tommy were/are/will be. And it does involve the word Mephisto.
Okay.
I did have my... it's kind of cheating from an Easter egg hunt, but I felt like it was worth mentioning comic book wise that although the movie version, the MCU version of Thanos is very different in this respect, the comic book version was obsessed with the embodiment of death.
Yep.
And that's why he does this whole Infinity Gauntlet thing in the comics version of Thanos.
Yep. And death is a long recurring character, like the embodiment, the physical embodiment of death has been a comic book character for 50 plus years, popping up in different circumstances. But you're right, Jaime, like the number one thing when you think of the character of Death in the MCU is Thanos' obsession with her, trying to prove to her that he's worthy of her love.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last one.
Last one.
Episode 9, Maiden, Mother, Crone, which we get to meet Agatha as all of those things. So I had Jaime's It Was Billy All Along, because that's kind of what we get out of this episode.
I went with It Was Agatha All Along on this one. They kind of both make this happen, and this shows how. And so that's why I paired up the previous one was, as of the 8th episode, it's like, oh, it was Billy all along. There was no Witch's Road. And this one is kind of like, the Witch's Road was a scam that became real this one time.
Yeah. And the one time it worked. Mine was, I'm going to go 1970s TV show, The Ghost and how do you say his name again?
Muir?
No, Maximov.
Oh, Maximov, yes.
Mm-hmm. The Ghost and Mrs. Maximov, or Ghost and Mr. Maximov.
There you go. Yep. Yeah, this, it's funny because we had already had the sort of flashback episode in episode, I guess it was 5 or 6. That told Billy's backstory, and we really hadn't gotten the, you know, that the what happened with Nikki, you know, all these sort of rumors about what Agatha had done throughout the years and everything else. So it was kind of an interesting way to sort of jump from that moment where we see Agatha actually die in the previous episode to have her suddenly get her backstory posthumously, and we get her basically. Her pregnant, her delivering the baby, and then her making the deal with Death, where she basically says, like, no, I want more time. And Death saying, or Rio saying, all I can give you is a bit more time. And knowing that, you know, Nikki's not for long. But just seeing that relationship and seeing, you know, what Agatha's principles are, and then seeing what Nikki's principles are. And then, you know, obviously the tragedy of his death and what that sort of drives her to, the origin of the song and how she actually used it. I thought that was a really kind of poetic way to sort of tie it all together at the end.
Yeah, I had the same quote of, I can only offer time.
I thought the pew 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 for this one, like, again, it wasn't a pew 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 heavy episode, but I thought that montage of her singing the song with different covens over time to steal their power, and using that same line of basically antagonizing them after singing the song, saying, oh, you're useless, and having them attack her and then steal the powers, which is what she yells at them in the second episode, right? She's like, you know, oh, just blast me, you know, whatevers. Knowing that was really what she was trying to do all along, when it was a scam. She was essentially trying to get these witches together so she could steal their powers. But she wasn't anticipating that Billy was so powerful that he could actually create a road.
Yeah, yeah. I had the same montage of the purple drain across different eras.
Yeah, and it sort of ties back into that quote that where, you know, you're so much like your mother, and, you know, she's not my mother, I have a mother. The quote from Agatha in this one where she says, unlike your mother, sorry, Wanda, you actually did something interesting with your powers, where she, you know, she sort of acknowledges that he's not just the Scarlet Witch's son, that he is something else. Yeah, I thought I wasn't sure how they were going to land this, but I was pretty good. It was like, as you guys know, I'm pretty good at sort of finding loopholes and plots and like that. But this was really well done. I didn't see every single twist. I thought they did a really good job of those last two episodes of winding those two pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then ending up with Ghost Agatha, who is a comic book character also. Agatha is a ghost in the comics as well. At times she was first a living person. Then she was a ghost. Don't ask me how, but eventually she was a living person again. But yeah, the fact that they kind of have this open door to, hey, let's go find Tommy, this adventure is going to continue, is really interesting. Which I guess is my big question is, this is obviously a to be continued. We know that this is sort of the middle of a three-part trilogy with WandaVision, Agatha All Along, leading to Vision Quest, which is supposed to be coming in the next couple of years, probably 2026. focusing on the Paul Bettany white Vision character, trying to figure out who he is. I wonder if that's where we see the continuation of this story in that one as well. But what did you guys...
Yeah, well, like you said, the people don't die in comic books. They can almost come back, right?
So, well, that's... Right. I mean, what would be the fun in killing off a comic book character? I mean, obviously there's drama in it, but like you want to be able to use great characters, right?
Well, I mean, her whole trick of creating covens so she can steal power kind of reveals her whole, you know, modus operandi, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the I wouldn't call this Easter egg. It was more thinking about this episode's title in particular and looking at the sort of meta analysis of this is a very feminine positive series.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of talk of reclaiming or being ashamed of things that are viewed as witches' things to do, like the riding the brooms, because it's like domesticity and mm-hmm. other things. So I viewed the maiden mother crone as a potential way to reclaim the sort of patriarchy's shallow view of femininity, of being, you know, highly desirable and most, you know, potentially valuable as maiden, right? It assumed in a patriarchal society to be pure and virginal. And then, of course, reaping some of that benefit as mother, losing themselves as value as an individual and being born as a supporter of some other entity, a child or children. And then the real sad tossing aside of like crone is like... ugly old woman is the literal definition. I had to look it up to make sure I had it right. And it's like, that's really sad way to think about it, of like, they have lost their value of like, they're no longer, you know, young, virginal. They're no longer raising children because the children are adults. Like, you have no value. That's not true, but it is one of those things that I think can happen to downplay the role of femininity and et cetera. So I felt like there was a reason they chose this particular title. It felt like a pretty fitting end to the series.
Yeah, very well said, Jaime. So my question to the two of you, we've now finished this one. Where does this rank as far as the Marvel Disney Plus shows in your mind? And I have a list here in case you need a little jogging. So we're talking about Agatha, Secret Invasion, Loki Season 1 and 2, Ms. Marvel, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Echo, Moon Knight, WandaVision. And I suppose you could add What If in there. Oh, and Hawkeye, sorry. And Hawkeye. Oh, and She-Hulk. Jeez, I'm forgetting more.
Of all the...
Mm-hmm. Of all those series like, there. Yeah, what, yeah.
You know, I mean, there are some shows that are better than others in there. I really like WandaVision. I thought that was just such a really visually interesting show and like kind of went somewhere that was a little different. Same with Loki. I really enjoyed the first season of Loki for that same reason. I thought Ms. Marvel was a little bit of a straight play, as was Hawkeye, but I actually enjoyed them because I enjoyed the characters. But this is very high for me. I really thought that they did a good job of making you care about the characters, giving them real depth and emotion, giving them stakes. And, you know, Agatha as sort of the hero anti-hero was a really interesting protagonist alongside Billy. I thought this was pretty strong. This is, you know, I really enjoyed this series.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I like this one a lot. It definitely benefited from really solid performances all around. The practical effects, I think, really helped it make it feel different than like a CGI fest.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of interesting balance I see here is that it does lean a lot on you understanding what happened in WandaVision, at the very least.
Yes,
it's really hard for it to stand alone. But I also appreciated how they say a lot, but not too much about Agatha's relationship with death, right? That death, the Aubrey Plaza character is like, look, man, like I gave you a benefit that nobody else is supposed to get. Like when I come for you, I come for you no matter what. And I gave your son more time, and Agatha doesn't view that as like sufficient. And you can sort of understand it like, well, why would death even be so enamored. I was like, well, because Agatha like racks up the bodies pretty. This is easy pickings, right? It's like, hey, just shout out to you for the loyalty card. We didn't have that before. You found a way through your innovation. And I don't think that they really had to like come straight out and say what happens there. It feels like they sort of trust people to fill in more of the why do they have this longstanding relationship.
Yeah. Oh, great stuff. All right. Watch list it up.
Let's watch list it up. You guys go ahead.
I had posted in our Slack channel today, and I've got it in our show notes here. One of my favorite sketch comedy groups is these three fellows from Ireland called Foyle, Arms, and Hogg, who I've been lucky enough to see when they first came to Canada a couple of years back with my daughter. They do this running bit where they do questions that you'd get asked at cross the border from one country to the other, or to pass through customs, things you know about these different countries, and they do it as a satire. They've done it for a lot of different countries. I think I posted the one previously about getting into Canada. There are ones for a lot of different places, but today they decided to have some fun and did the how to get into the empire. And it's a very funny, it's only about 3 minutes long, of, you know, these two guys basically being interviewed at the border by Darth Vader. What do you know about the empire? Like, you know, who is the evil empire? Oh, Disney. You know, like, it's a very funny little take on the Star Wars stuff. So if you get a chance, I recommend that. The other thing that I flagged was we found out as part of this last two episodes of Agatha, they showed us a little trailer that talked about, you know, hey, here's what's coming, you know, in the short term and long term for Disney Plus. One of the things that jumped out quickly was that Deadpool and Wolverine, the big blockbuster from this summer, is coming to Disney Plus on November 12th. So we really are less than a couple of weeks away from being able to rewatch that one. I think that's a movie that's going to really benefit from some rewatches, because it is, as we talk about Easter eggs, that pretty thing deep, is just absurdly packed with Easter eggs. So I'm looking forward to giving that one another watch. Obviously, it's been on demand for a little while now, but being able to watch it at your leisure, should you be a Disney Plus subscriber, it's pretty darn convenient. So, yeah.
What do you got, Jaime?
I finally got around to watching Devs on Hulu. This is circa 2020. All the cool kids have watched it, so I'm definitely last.
Not last time,
eh? Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It was a good, solid one. Yeah. And really appreciated the fact that it does, without spoilers, it does wrap up in a concrete way. My significant other, when we started watching, he's like, are you sure it's good? Because how come there hasn't been a second season in this era of there always has to be a second season? If it doesn't have a second season, it must suck, it got canceled, right? And I was like, no, hear me out, I bet you, I heard it's good. I have people with street cred who tell me it's good, so let's watch. And we enjoyed it.
Yeah, I watched that when it was first came out, and it took me a while to figure out that the actress who plays the main character, she's the other robot from the movie Ex Machina. AI.
From Ex Machina with Alicia Vikander.
Yeah.
I guess if you wanted, you could also know that she's from House of the Dragon as well.
Oh, yes.
Which I didn't recognize. She's the lady of whispers, I guess.
Yeah, the warm lady, yeah.
And
Masaria, yeah.
Although it's not quite a pick. Civil War is by the same creator, director, or showrunner kind of guy. And you look back and you're like, wait a minute, this dude uses the same actors all the time. There's a whole bunch of Devs actors in that movie as well.
Interesting. I didn't realize that. That's interesting. Yeah. What kind of Americans are you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What kind of Americans?
Yeah. So that's this is Alex Garland you're talking about, right? He is probably best known for like 28 Days Later. That was his big break. He also did the Dread movie, that great, the more modern one, where it's like Dread.
What's it called?
Dread, like Judge Dread.
Oh, Judge Dread. Yeah, the one with Carl Urban.
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. He did that one as well. Yeah, he's a really interesting filmmaker. I have not watched all of his stuff, but I've enjoyed everything I've watched. And yeah, Ex Machina is like, that's a really interesting and trippy movie.
Including Poe Dameron and
Was it Admiral Hux, Vice Admiral Hux or whatever?
Yeah. Admiral Hux,
yeah. General Hux, I think.
Is he general? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's, I forgot about the joke from the second movie. Hello, is General Hux there? Did you guys watch Annihilation? Yeah. He did that movie, too, and I never watched that one.
The one with, that's with
Natalie Portman, I think.
And also Oscar Isaac as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Hmm. There's a thread we have to go back and unravel.
There you go. Time to dive down the Alex Garland rabbit hole.
Yeah, I don't have a, I don't have anything today except that I've been watching, catching up on the Dark Material stuff when I can. Between watching all the other stuff, there's a couple of shows have come back on Apple TV that I watch. Shrinking is one of them, which has a Star Wars connection.
pretty good one.
Yeah, yeah. And who's the little furry character who runs around with Han Solo?
A little furry
character? Little? So not George Chewbacca, because he'd be very large?
Oh, George Lucas.
George
that's
Lucas.
Right. That's
George Lucas.
That's right. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
All right. With that, that's it for another week. So, Jonathan, people in touch with you, where would they find you?
I would suggest you could look for me on Instagram. It's @JPKNews. Or you can look for me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And then, Jaime, where can people get a hold of you?
I'm on Twitter as @DevOfTheHair.
All right. My name is Timitra, TimMitra, on the social thingies, Mastodon, Blue Sky, what's the other one called? Threads. Yeah. So those are the only three. No, I'm on the fourth one too, but I'm not going to mention them.
Yeah, I'm disassociating.
Yep. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens in a few days.
Mm-hmm.
So until next time, by the way, we're recording on Halloween, so happy Halloween, everybody. Yeah, until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Baseball glove thing.
Oh my god.
Like, those are expensive seats. I, you know, people brought up the
season ticket holders too, those guys apparently.
Yeah, they were banned from game 5.
I feel like this needs permaban, and here's why, right? Like, there's interference, like I think it was like Steve Bartman from the Chicago Cubs, and accidentally caused his own
Cubs. Had to change his name and move out of town. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really? That was like...
Because he was listening to the radio and he pulled the ball away from one of his own players that cost them an out that ended up losing them the game.
Yeah, oh, right, but this was like, you know, a bang-bang play kind of thing of like, what would you do? This thing is flying towards you. Mm-hmm. At the time, I'm like, I blame the people who make the stands able to do this versus having the, you know, the lion pit or the gorilla pit that separates you at the zoo from the beast. Right. However, in this case with we're talking about the Dodgers Yankees game in the World Series, like not only was it not a bang, bang play, you were hanging on to the guy's glove, trying to rip the ball out. And your buddy who is not involved in the bang, bang play is grabbing his other wrist. I'm like, you've presumably committed some sort of assault and battery here.
Well, not, I was going to say, like, what about the guy's wrist? Like, was he able to continue the game? And it's like they were pulling it. Like he was stretched out to his full length. Right. And they were like yanking on his arm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an area where, you know, I'm a strong believer of like, look, you can't accommodate people like this. Like, for example, it might be controversial to say, but I'm like, every time you have some idiot that runs onto the field, I'm like, they should be tased.
Yes.
Yeah, mandatory tasing until this stops.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing would set them straight like a good clubbing.
Exactly.
True. Oh, next thing they'll be driving around in garbage trucks with orange vests on.
So, Jaime, how are you feeling about what's coming up next week?
I had to think about it. I've got like a bazillion things going on.
Didn't you call it the season finale of America?
The season finale. Yeah, it gets real interesting. We'll see what happens here.
The big climactic thing is the event on Tuesday, but it's what happens after Tuesday is going to be the really interesting thing. I don't think even John could figure out this plot point.
Oh no, and I've been obsessed with this reality TV show for a while now, and I still am like I don't know how to I don't think there's any way to know what's going to happen until it happens.
No, it's got to be well, I don't know if you heard. So we are talking about the American election, which we normally don't do, but have you guys heard about the Red Mirage?
No.
So the Red Mirage is that a lot of Republican like locales or whatever, right? Their votes are counted early because they're smaller, right? And of course, they don't count mail-in ballots until the very end, and that's just something that's done. So when the broadcasts start, the Republicans naturally lead because of the fact that their votes are, like, the ridings that they're counting in are smaller, like less people, so the counting is faster.
Yep.
So at the beginning of the evening, it looks like the Republicans are winning seats left, right, and center. And it's not until a little bit later, they called it the blue mist or something like that or whatever, but that the Democrat votes start to come in and then things change. And that's why Trump in 2016, again, sorry, apologize, we're talking about politics, but which we swore we would never do or use the T word on this show. But... and I've just broken it twice. I guess I don't like this episode is explicit now. that person starts claiming that miraculously,
they're finding votes. Yeah,
they're finding votes, and that's what how he played it last time to rile people up, and he'll do it again next Tuesday. The reason why I'm talking about the Red Mirage is there's a campaign to let people know that this is the reality of how the original part of the evening starts when they start reporting on the results from the ridings, right? They call them ridings in the States? I don't know. They call them that in Canada.
I'm not familiar with that term. So
it's
no,
like districts, I guess.
Yeah.
Districts, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, it doesn't matter what the popular vote does, apparently, because, you know, the Democrats won the last two elections in terms of popular vote, right?
Yes, we do have a very strange structure around that has really bizarre modern takes on that, but it does have a historical need, or at least perceived need. Whether it was actually a correct need at the time is definitely a thing for the historians. But it is a fact that, you know, you end up with a... Here's the best way of putting it, right? I constantly remind folks of, like, your country is like a singular country. My country is 50 countries in a trench coat pretending to be one country.
Yeah.
when you refer to us as America, I'm like, that's very inaccurate. It is United States of America. And so you end up with some differences there that... that manifests themselves weirdly. So, like, my state, Washington State, is, it's not that you can only, just to be really clear, it's not only mail-in ballot, but everybody has access to mail-in ballot. So I voted, when did I vote? 3 or 4 days ago, and I had the ballot in my hand since 2 or 3 days before that, right? And we still have, you know, about a week to go, or a little less than a week to go. And and it can vary from state to state. Some states are like, we'll start tallying them up. We won't tell anybody, but we'll start tallying them up now. And some are like, nope, not going to break the seal on this until actual election day itself. And it's very, very weird there, as opposed to, and we don't have mandatory voting, and our voting, like, in a very good year is like 30% turnout of potential people who could have voted. This is quite different than, I think Australia has something like 98% because it's mandatory, but they've also made, like, Sausage Day or something. Like, there's like free food, and they've turned it into kind of like a festival almost. So I would love to see here mandatory voting, mandatory day off. Everybody gets freedom barbecue.
Voting privilege, yeah.
Freedom barbecue, you know. Since that's how we like to measure things in freedom and barbecue.
Should there be fireworks too, Jaime?
Yeah, exactly. You can pass out, you know, little bald eagle beanie babies to everyone, you know, whatever. It should just be like NASCAR or something, you know. Everybody got all of their, just have the politicians with their logos of the sponsors just right on there.
Well. It'd be a fun time next week.
Yeah.
Talk about the best pew-pew and...
Yeah, really. Should we do
what
our...
What they said.
Yeah. And best quote.
And the Easter eggs. Yeah.
And the big question, who won?
Yeah, who really won?
Yeah. Yep. So we're... Next week is just Penguin and Lord X.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
Yep. Because we finished up Agatha, and then we have to decide... in the week after, if we want to start doing things, because I think Silo comes the week after that, if we want to talk about that.
Okay.
And as we head towards the end of November, we're going to get Star Wars. What's it called? Skeleton Crew. Skeleton Crew is coming beginning of December. Mm-hmm. The shows never stop. They never stop. Yeah, I can't remember. I think it's Skeleton Crew. I saw a release schedule for it, and one of the episodes comes on like Christmas Eve. I was like, well, that's all right. Not that I mind now that my kids are grown, but it's definitely, I don't know if you get your maximum audience there, or people just are going to watch it sometime over the holidays. I don't know.
What's that?
Skeleton Crew.
Yeah, isn't that the Chinese food?
All my Jewish friends are like, that's the best day of the year. The movie theaters are showing new movies. There's Chinese food. It's excellent.
Yeah. Show enough.
Yep.
All right.
We can say goodbye. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.